All right, what's ugly, smelly and boring and is standing in front of me called Neil?
It's in the corner, back by the woodpile.
I'm Spoon Counter Guy, thanks for dropping by. Welcome to the second installment of Songs from a 1980s Roller Rink Dumpster, the podcast where we try to unearth some of the lesser-known musical gems of the said decade. Joining me again is DJ Mindub, a guy with a basement full of records, an office wall lined with rare Nike shoes, and a heart full of synthesized joy, as if built by Robert Moog himself and tickled by Vince Clark. So let's get on it.
Okay, so this band is Camouflage.
Head back to Germany again. Three piece from Germany. And they're certainly one of the synth pop mega artists, I guess you could say. They've when they first came out, it was the late 80s, I think 87. Mm-hmm. And the album called Voices and Images. Black man leaders cried for freedom. It was very well received, but it was also...
I was going to say, one of my good friends who was into a lot of this stuff, I asked him what he thought of the Camouflage. He's like, he thought they sound too close to Depeche Mode.
Yeah, it was very...
I think his words were rip-off, but yeah. I didn't think it was a rip-off.
Well, but, you know, it definitely had that same sort of sound.
Sure.
And the vocals were very similar, you know, same sort of tone and timbre as Dave's voice, but you know, I think the songs kind of stood out a little more because their English wasn't very good. So if you listen to a lot of the songs, lyrics aren't quite complete sentences, and sometimes they use incorrect tenses. You know, it wasn't their first language.
Right. For some reason, it's cute when Asians destroy English, but when Germans destroy it, it's like, ugh.
Yeah. What do they call that when Asians?
Well, there's English or Chinglish.
English, that's
or
it.
In China, they call it Chinglish, but
because
they laugh at themselves. But yeah. I don't know what you call a German butchering the English language.
Yeah, yeah, no, they try, and I understand.
English is a hard language, I will say, now that I've taught it. We have so many rules we don't follow, and, you know, we have slang.
So many exceptions.
And, we have new words every year. You know, most languages don't evolve like that.
No.
Anyway, you were saying.
But anyway, this song's called That Smiling Face. It's the first song off the Voices and Images album. And I love how it builds throughout the entire song. And, these words are not a rescue in my eyes. Never sure. Great song to begin the album. It just captures you, and then the rest of the album is just as good.
All right, now this next one, would have probably ended up on my list too, but I'll let you have it.
Well, thank you, sir. I'm going to introduce this song much like an ancient Chinese novel would introduce a character. If you ever read any old Chinese books...
Because so many people are familiar with...
Well, yeah. That. Well, I'll tell you this. If you ever read any of the big Chinese novels, the story starts off about one guy and all the things he's doing, and then he runs into another guy, and then maybe it'll follow him for a little while. And eventually, maybe, I don't know, hundreds of pages into it, then you actually get to who the real hero is of the book. It just goes on forever. I think that's how real life works. So when I had my record shop, and this is back in the early 2000s, it didn't have a shower, and I lived in the back of it. So my good friends Jake Stein and Damian Marley would let me use their shower, which is a couple blocks away. And I was walking on the sidewalk, and I think I saw a piece of cardboard laying there, and it completely rebooted my memory as to breakdancing, and because, you know, people used to bring their cardboard, you know.
Yeah, you didn't go anywhere without it.
So on this cassette that I had, it had a bunch of other kind of like a lot of the 808 kind of electro.
Sure, yeah, early electro stuff.
Yeah, it had the song called Your Life by Conk, and it was a great
I like how you're stressing the N.
Because you're dirty-minded. Man who likes old Englishmen.
What?
So this is one of the songs I did try to breakdance to, and I stressed the word try. In junior high, I had a teacher by the name of Mrs. I don't want to use her name, I guess. Well, I'll say her name. Mrs. was her name, and she talked very monotone. She would talk like this. Class, now we're going to sing a sea shanty song. Very much how robots would talk in the future. So people sang, some people danced, some people did little routines, and I think a guy got there and told jokes during talent day. So it came my turn, and I realized I was just such a horrible break dancer that I wasn't going to really pull it off, so I decided to go via comedy. I was going to break dance so badly that it would be my comedy act, right? So I had a jam box and I had Herbie Hancock's Rocket. And I started break dancing and I just would run into the furniture, you know, hurt myself. I really went all out. And, you know, the whole class was laughing their heads off. And right in the middle of it, pushed stop on the jam box and said, "Class, stop laughing. Tim has just received an F for the day."
Oops.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my one performance of breakdancing, and I can somewhat thank Conk for, even though I didn't use it that day, Rocket was such a more familiar song to everybody.
But you wanted to use your Conk.
I. Oh, Mrs. Class.
You've opened this up to.
Yeah. There you go. But it's a cool song, and it has all these bizarre rhythms, and it is super percussive heavy. I know the guys in the band, they were kind of all over the place. Where I know one was an actor, and was in one of the Jim Jarmusch films, and I think one of them went on to play for Jimmy Buffett. And so, yeah, they're all pretty talented and very, very unique.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're really highly revered, like in the New York club scene, you know, coming out of the early 80s. And so much, a lot of their stuff got reissued on, there's a label called Soul Jazz Records that's notorious for reissuing just the best obscure stuff out there. And they did an entire retrospective of Conk stuff.
They had a very much of a world beat kind of thing going on. Notice the 80s is really where I feel like world music entered the pop radio scene, like Gloria Estefan and Bow Wow Wow was using South African rhythms, and I went to see what I could see.
I couldn't find no one, but everyone found me. Certainly came to prominence, I would guess you could say.
Right.
And I don't know if that's just because I started paying more attention to it or because, you know, it was the trend at the time. They're, you know, I think a lot of the disco artists certainly experimented with a lot more, especially Latin and and those type of rhythms, you know.
Culture Club, I'll tell them before you, is very Latin.
This one is B-Movie. B-Movie is another synth pop kind of alternative gothic band, whatever you want to call it. Kind of similar to Propaganda a little bit. They had a bigger hit with a song called Nowhere Girl. But I really like this song called Remembrance Days. Kind of incorporates a little more guitar than everything else I've selected for to play for everybody, but it's still a pretty driving keyboard, bass line, and beautiful vocals.
Now it's just a memory eroded by the
one actually I haven't heard recently, only because of the comedian Chip Pope. I was a fan of his work in Austin Story.
I just want her to think that I have a career so that while she continues to dump me, she understands the reasons she dumped me are no longer valid.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Sounds bad. Move on.
Yeah, you should move on.
I have. I'm only in it for the invalidation of the reasons. And if she marries me, that's fine too.
And so we're friends on Facebook, and he's a big 80s guy. He's always posting stuff that he finds. And so this is a guy by the name of Donnie Iris.
Weird, because I've seen his records out in the stores, like everywhere I go, and I just always flip right by him.
He kind of looks like a beefy Elvis Costello, kind of geeky looking, but built too. But he has got hooks galore.
He never really had any huge hits though.
No, his biggest hit I think was called Aaliyah. When you type in his name, that's the first thing that pops up. So I assume that would be his closest thing to a hit. But he's still making records, and again, very hook heavy. And
I think he's one of those artists kind of respected by fans of that genre, that kind of power pop.
Yeah,
stuff,
that's I guess that's the best thing. Yeah,
power pop. So I'd almost rather be one of those. Not as well known publicly, but respected by my peers. And
you can still go to the 7-Eleven to buy chocolate milk and condoms without being bothered.
Man, I remember those days. Now I can't go anywhere. kidding.
That's right. I wonder why you texted me to bring over chocolate milk and condoms.
Exactly.
Okay, so this song is not actually from the 80s proper.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I think
it's not January 1st, 1982.
Right, well, it enjoyed some success, I think, still in the 80s, but it was initially released in late 70s, I mean, 1978, somewhere around there. The stage name is Plastique Bertrand. Forget what his full name is, something long and Belgian, which you'd think by the song title he was French, but I think he's actually Belgian, and it's sung in French as well, but just a relentless, cool, like, garage rock type groove, but still firmly planted with some keyboard influence in there. Bam bam, mon chasse place, j'ai sur mon lit à bouffer sa langue en buvant trop mon whisky. Quant à moi, peu dormi, vie débris, mais j'ai dû dormir dans la gouttière où j'ai eu un flash. Every time I hear the song, never fails to put me in a good mood, get me moving. So just happy, and you know, somebody had said it was kind of like his attempt to sound like the Ramones, which, you know, I can kind of see a little resemblance, but. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but it's still just a phenomenal song by Plastique Bertrand.
So, any more power pop jams?
I do. This is a group called Honeymoon Suite.
Oh, yeah.
My story of how I found them was that at church, there was an older couple, and they had a granddaughter. Like, all of a sudden, she just started living with them. And, you know, I was so sheltered, it's hard for me to understand that someone wouldn't live with their parents. And so all of a sudden she just showed up, and I remember asking, well, where's her parents at, you know? And they're like, don't ask, you know, or don't, that's rude, you know? But she was a little edgy, and one good thing about that was, you know, I think she got in a lot of trouble later, but she had some music I'd never had heard before. And so I remember she introduced me to the Violent Femmes and Honeymoon Suite, which, you know, they're not anything alike, but... Anyway, it kind of blew me away. And it also, like Donnie Iris, there's kind of a horn-rimmed nerdy guy on the cover of this album.
Weird, they have very, very devoted fans.
Really?
Yeah, like, loyal fans that'll travel anywhere to go and hear them. And, I just always got them confused with the Honey Drippers, which was Robert Plant project. So for some reason, every time I hear Honeymoon Suite, I think they did Sea of Love, but that's no, that's the Honey
Drippers. Their biggest hit, I guess, or claim to fame was, or that movie, One Crazy Summer.
Which is a great movie.
Yeah, I think the song on the credits is Honeymoon Suite. If I could grow wings, I would do anything just to keep you with me.
Can't you see? I think the girl in there was hot. I can't remember.
What, a movie with a hot girl in it?
I know,
in the
80s? That.
Come on.
Who was it?
Demi Moore?
Was it Demi Moore?
Yeah, man. It's Demi Moore was the girl in that.
Well, okay. Well, yeah, she's pretty hot.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
It was back then, but that was like one of her first.
Yeah, very young.
So, what do you got next for us? You got another synth band or?
Well, of course. This is one I discovered. I had a buddy of mine who moved to Dallas, Texas, got married, and I rode out there with his parents for the wedding. So anyway, when we were out there, he gave me this CD sampler from a radio station that was out there, and the station was KDGE The Edge. From deep within the sound of the Dallas Underground, Edge Club, After Hours, on 94.5 KDGE, Gainesville, Dallas, Fort Worth. Still on the air today. It's changed its frequency. I think it was 94.5 back then, but now it's...
How do you remember that?
I recorded hours of this radio station on blank cassettes to take back home with me, because this was a very upfront, forward-thinking radio station. I mean, there was nothing like it anywhere in Florida. I mean, maybe some community radio stations were playing some of this stuff, but I mean, you could turn on and listen to, you know, all this great alternative music before anybody really knew about them or anything. They were blazing.
And they were financially successful?
Yeah. I mean, if they're still in there today, I mean, they were one of the first radio stations to play a lot of early house and techno and rave.
So like they were all
UK
over the place.
Hardcore stuff. Yeah, they had a show called Edge Club with Jeff Kay. And I mean, I still have that cassette to this day. And I hunted down every single song that he played. Mm-hmm. Always wait and listen to him back announce the set so I could find out what these records were. And it's a huge influence on my formative DJing years, I guess you could say, just because it turned me on to a whole lot of dance music. But anyway, regardless, one of the bands that was on this compilation CD, they put out these CDs called Tales from the Edge. And so on Tales from the Edge Volume 1, there were these two kind of electronic synth bands on that compilation, and one of them was Lesson 7, but the main one that stood out to me was this group called T42. T42, depending on how you want to say it. It's hyphenated. I've seen it unhyphenated sometimes. Anyway, it was three guys, and they basically completely ripped off Ola Moore by Erasure for their first song called Don't Let My Love. Don't let my love push you away. Song is straight up, will give you a cavity because it is so just sugary, sweet, straight up pop.
Yeah.
Like every chord change, I mean, you can already hear in your head before they, just because it's so predictable, but you couldn't help but love it.
Where are they from?
They're from Texas, in Dallas. And
that's cool.
Yeah, they're kind of obscure now. I don't think they're doing much at all music-wise, but they ended up releasing an album. It's produced by Paul Robb, who is in Information Society. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of one of those guilty pleasures that I still go back and listen to.
Did Erasure ever return the favor?
No. I don't even
knew they existed.
Yeah, as far as I know. I mean, I know that T for Two, I think, opened up for Information Society and this other group, Anything Box, and some other bands on some small little U.S. tours, but I don't think they ever reached any level of success that Erasure would know about them. But
until they ended up on this podcast.
Right. Now I don't believe those things you say. I thought this podcast was going to be just about 80s bands.
Yeah, the Sugar Babes that I want to talk about, I didn't realize there was actually a modern group called Sugar Babes.
Yeah, they're from England. They're hot.
Hot as in good music, or?
Hot as in not good music, but nice to look at.
I gotcha. This group is from the 80s, like 87, in fact, and it consisted of Stacy, Patrice, and Kimiko. These Sugar Babes, the original Sugar Babes, probably wouldn't like the comparison, but when New Edition came out, obviously they spawned a lot of very young R&B-ish kind of pop groups in the 80s. Mostly male, I think, but oh my.
I told you they were hot.
Yeah. You can't see this, y'all, but Mind Up is bringing up some very suggestive pictures of the current Sugar Babes. And yeah. Anyways, can you turn that off? Sure. Okay, thank you. So they have a similar kind of sound. So they had some of the sweet songs like I'll Educate You on My Love and The Perfect Kind of Love. And Birds of a Feather, Rock the Beat. You know, that kind of just fun stuff.
Of course they do.
Right. I didn't know the Sugar Babes back in the 80s. It was only recently, maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, I was working at a local record shop we'll call the Great Getaway. It was like the greatest job for a while. My job was to basically go through all these records and crates that they had been pushing in the back of a warehouse for years and years and years. And if it wasn't something they recognized right off the bat, like, you know, the Beatles or Michael Jackson, they would just shove it in the back and they will get to it later. So my job was to go through there and start finding stuff that was worthwhile. But the only bad thing was they put me in a tiny little office, which was fine at first when I was by myself, but then they put this guy back there with me who was kind of a manager, but not over me, over a different department. And I'll call him Penguin. That was kind of his nickname. He doesn't know it, but because he looked like the Penguin from Batman. But he didn't like me, and he was actively trying to get me fired. In fact, stuff would get back to me how he was trying to convince the owner to get rid of me. And so, very uncomfortable situation. But one day, I come across this record of the Sugar Babes, and I put it on the little record player that my manager had been so nice to give me. And it cheered me up in spite of the guy planning my demise. It's cool how music can do that sometimes. I always associate how maybe drugs are to people who live under a bridge. It kind of makes you think like, yeah, man, everything's going to be okay, man.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I don't know what it is, but for some reason, when I'm bummed out, it's like depressing music makes me feel better. So, yeah, if I'm having a bad day, I'll put on the Smiths and my days. I don't know why.
Well, take it for what you can.
I guess it's, you know, comfort and solace in the fact that my life isn't the only one that sucks.
I can understand. I remember, I know I always tell stories about China, but I remember in China feeling sorry for myself because I didn't have lights in my apartment. They had broken and no one would help me fix them. And so I had to, just looking around the dark at night with my cell phone light, and I woke up just angry about this. And I was on my bicycle going to class and I saw this, like a little tractor. They had a lot of vehicles that we wouldn't have here, but a little motorized vehicle pulling a trailer full of trash, and there was an old woman who would have been probably like my grandmother's age laying in the back of it asleep. And she probably was a trash woman, you know, I say sanitation. But I thought, man, that's someone's grandma, and she's laying back there asleep in trash. You know, things aren't so bad.
True.
You know,
so things can always be worse.
So anyway, back to the Sugar Babes. They only put out one record. I think two of the girls went on to put a record out together, but as far as I know, they've just went on and raised some families. And...
Next artist actually briefly touched on in our last little segment, T for Two. They actually opened for this band, a small little U.S. tour, and the group is called Anything Box, and the song is called Living in Oblivion. I am so afraid of living in oblivion. The first album was called Peace, and it was just a collection of more sugary, sweet synth pop ditties that are fun to sing along to. And
I think I know now how to butter you up.
I was gonna say everything I seem to talk about kind of has the same sort of sound, but yeah, that's just what really appealed to me, you know, at the time. And luckily there were a lot of different artists that were doing sort of the same thing. And so,
have you ever dated a girl that understood this about you?
Heck no.
Really?
Are you kidding?
Hear that, ladies?
I don't think they exist.
If you understand synthesizer music from the 80s, you have a green light into Mind Dub's arms.
Yeah. But no, Anything Box, they had a really great sound. They toured, I think, with, I want to say Book of Love, too, and did some stuff with Information Society. And Living in Oblivion even spawned a series of 80s compilations that, I forget how many different volumes there are, but you can find them anywhere. They're really great comps. Another hit that they had off of the album is Jubilation. Was a hit too. I Felt the Pain. I think probably my next favorite one on there is called Our Dreams. And after all the years had gone, only a few of us ever reached our goals. Some of us are still trying.
As I mentioned before, there was no Christian radio station in Indiana that I'm aware of, and so
they had it was just AM.
Well, that's true. They had religious radio stations, and they were mostly preachers. You know, in fact, I worked for one of them for a while, and I was telling my wife the other day about the time I fell asleep on the air. It was I think WVHI, and I had a janitor job that was all night the night before, so I had to be at the radio station like 5 in the morning to turn it on. And so I maybe had an hour of sleep on the radio station floor before I turned the station on. And I mean, it's just radio preacher. So you either set the reel-to-reel machine or you put the cassette on or something. And well, you know, I probably laid my head down on the board or something. And next thing I know, the reel-to-reel machine is like, and the on the air, on all the phone lines are ringing. So I had the next program queued up already, so I hit play and got back on the air. And the first phone that I grabbed, I was like, hello, VHI. And it was my boss and the manager. And he said, you okay up there? And I was like, yeah, the tape broke. I totally lied. Totally, at a Christian radio station, no less. And he's like, okay. It sounds like okay now. I'm like, okay. So a few days later, I had to come through the office or something, and the secretary caught me. She said, by the way, the manager said that everybody's allowed to fall asleep on the air once, and that's it.
Oh, wow.
So they knew.
Did they check the tape to see if it
No, I think it, everybody falls asleep on that shift. It was like, it was Sunday morning, 5 in the morning, and I wasn't the first.
Wow. I'm sure, definitely happened, I think, at WRVU a few times.
Did you really?
Well, I didn't. But like on the overnight. And some of the shows, like if I'd fill in, I'd do something different than my usual show. So I'd play, you know, some more ambient, loungy, like, down tempo stuff. And it kind of zoned me out a little bit.
I just now remember, by the way, because my dad worked for the same radio station. It was just like little side shifts. They just paid minimum wage. In fact, the place was so cheap that you had to bring your own toilet paper. I'm not kidding. Anyway, he wanted to play music because some of the radio preachers, they're on a fluid time. You know, they spoke as long as God wanted them to, I guess, and then they stopped. So sometimes you would have like 5 minutes to the hour or even 15 minutes, you know. So you're allowed to play some music to fill in. And they didn't say what. I mean, as long as it was gospel-y or something. So my dad wanted to play more music because that's kind of what he signed up for, he thought. And so he brought his own cassette player in, and the one you could adjust the speed.
Oh, right.
So the radio preachers would be preaching a little quicker, and he would have more time to
play more music.
Yeah, well, the manager was listening, and he called and says, Dave, is there something wrong with the tape machine? So-and-so, the preacher doesn't sound right. And my dad was more honest than I was. He told him what he was up to. And he was told not to do that anymore. So, I can't remember, but somebody turned me on to Amy Grant. I never had heard of anything gospel pop or whatever, and it was because I only knew like Southern Gospel, I think. The album Unguarded. It's a fun record. What's kind of cool is later when I moved down to Nashville and I was in college, I was working as a valet car park guy, and at Green Hills Grill. Parked several celebrities.
Which
car.
Is reopening, if you haven't heard.
No, I haven't heard that.
They just read it not too long ago. Yeah, they're going to reopen the Green Hills Grill.
Wow, they had good fruit tea is what I remember the most. Yeah. It was kind of pricey. I couldn't afford to eat there. But anyways, Amy Grant came fairly often. And I remember she drove like a Volvo station wagon, I think, or something like that.
It's a MILF car.
Is that what that is? But very nice, very sweet. And I remember she took advice from me one time. Basically, there was like a long wait, like 20 or 30 minutes, and she said, she was with a friend, and she said, well, what do you think we should do? She's asking me. I'm like, have you seen your friend in a while? And she's like, no, it's been a while. I said, well, you can sit out here on the sidewalk and just hang out, get reacquainted or whatever. I don't know. This is the best thing I come up with. I was a little nervous, I had to admit. I didn't tell her I knew who she was, but anyway, she said, that sounds good. And so she handed me the keys to the car, and her and her friend just sat on the sidewalk and talked. And that was the one advice.
Sidewalk, talk.
Talk, yeah. All comes full circle.
Man, yeah. Way to bring it back around.
Yeah, well, and then later on, this was when she was married to Vince Gill, or is, I guess, still. But me and a friend went to the movies on some night, I guess nobody else, it might have been a major holiday where everybody else was hanging with their families or something, but me and a friend went, and in the theater it was just me, my friend, Vince Gill, and Amy Grant, and their kid. The movie wasn't very good, and I remember like cracking a joke at one point, and they all laughed. So that was my claim to fame. But have you met her?
She might come in the tower a few times, and I mean, I know Vince. He would come in the tower a couple times, but working there was nice because I mean, we, you know, had all different kinds of celebrities come in, and you just kind of got them. I mean, just living in Nashville, you sort of get immune to it anyway. Yeah. But even especially there, and you know, of course, I mean, they just want to shop like anybody else, right. And so I mean, it was rare that somebody came in that you were just like, oh my gosh, you know, when like blown away.
Who was that?
Well, Little Richard walked in one day.
No kidding, wow.
I mean, it was like something straight out of the movie. Like, he had people there to open the doors for him.
Whoa.
So both doors flew open, air rushes in, and all of a sudden, Little Richard, like, shows up in the middle of the door. And
was he dressed to the nines?
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm. Makeup, everything. Like, you know, I mean, he's like, he just got off stage or something. Okay, honey, now you are going to have to show me where... You know, he just went off, and I was just like, whoa. You know, you just don't see somebody that huge.
Right. He's legendary, yeah. And he's just such a character, you know?
Oh, for sure. We got the gather, now the river to stop.
Okay, what's your last choice for our songs that we pulled out of the dumpster?
Well, it's strange that you say that, because I've actually found a few of this band's CDs
in the garbage before.
Seriously.
And
what garbage?
It's a record store that I worked at.
They actually threw stuff away, huh?
In Tampa, yeah. They couldn't give them away, and now they're worth quite a bit of money online. It's a group that got a lot of radio play down in Florida. They're originally from California. A group called Cause and Effect. Bordering on 90s. Any of you out there that want to be sticklers?
It's okay, you played a song from the 70s, late 70s.
Oh, that's true too.
In the last one we did.
Yeah, so who cares? Anyway. Yeah,
screw y'all.
Sadly, they had one of their members pass away while on stage. They were playing a show and he had an asthma attack. And they couldn't get help fast enough. They're the perfect combination of a lot of freestyle music, labels like Pandisc and Micmac and Warlock and labels like that. They kind of had this male-female vocal thing with like an electro sort of breakbeat. It's a style that, you know, growing up in Florida, you couldn't escape.
Why is breakbeat so big in Florida? And did that spawn Florida breaks?
Oh, yeah. It definitely had a huge influence. I mean, a lot of those Florida Breaks records of the 90s, you know, they all sampled a lot of freestyle records. So, and the DJs that were champions of that Florida Break sound.
When I had my record shop, I remember Florida Breaks was kind of the whipping boy for among DJs. I mean, well,
no,
maybe Goya Trance might have been up there too.
No, the one DJ that tried to play Florida Breaks was the whipping boy.
Because
he was an idiot. But
that's, yeah.
Neither here nor there.
Yeah.
But anyway, Cause and Effect, they were the perfect combination of freestyle and synth pop, just because the songwriting and the sounds and whatnot, so catchy, could easily be mixed in with like your Friday, Saturday night dance party mix shows. They had a lot of big hits with like You Think You Know Her. Other hit was What Do You See? And I'll tell you once again to accept my words once more. But that album is just the first one, especially. It ended up getting reissued a little later, but the first album, it's just self-titled, Cause and Effect, is one of my all-time favorite road trip, put on blast and sing at the top of my lungs kind of albums. And they're still doing stuff today. They actually did a Kickstarter not too long ago to put out a newer project. The remaining members, they're still making music and still sound great.
Cool.
I was watching 16 Candles recently, rewatching it, and showing it to some folks that had missed it, had missed the entire 80s pop culture and in the Western world. But
right.
And I noticed in the scene where they're in the dance, the school dance, they play this song that sounds a whole lot like Madness, Our House. Father gets up late for work. Mother has to iron his shirt. Then she sends the kids to school. Sees them off with. But it's not. It really bugged me for like a few weeks. And so finally I found on the internet, of course, that I guess they wanted to use the song by Madness, but for legal reasons, couldn't get it. And so Ira Newborn, who did some of the maybe incidental soundtracks, he composed this very quick little thing. And it's called Filene or Filene, I don't know. And it was apparently named after the girlfriend of Mr. Newborn at the time. So,
oh.
Yeah, it's all of like 30 seconds long. But it's
just enough for the scene.
Yeah.
Does sound just like it.
Yeah, and I wish I would have fleshed it out, because it's a pretty cool groove thing at the very last couple seconds. But
so So I wanted to start doing, if we do more of these podcasts, to do two things. The second thing being current artists that are still carrying that torch, have that 80s sound, which we'll cover here in a minute. And then the things that either were never available or are completely rare or obscure, or things we would like to have that were from the 80s. Yeah, so I'll do the former and you'll do the latter. When we were speaking on the last podcast about Jellybean Benitez and Madonna's producers specifically, one of the other producers I meant to mention actually was Nile Rodgers, who was very famous because...
Daft Punk.
Well, yeah, and before that, way before that.
Chic.
Great disco god, I would say.
Did I pass?
Yes, you did, young Padawan learner. So Nile Rodgers produced Madonna's second record, Like a Virgin. So great songs like Material Girl, Angel, Dress You Up. He also did a soundtrack for a movie called Alphabet City.
It's another Saturday night in Alphabet City.
Very obscure 80s movie. I happened to see it because I had a video store at one time, and I would just watch anything just to be able to talk about it to the customers. And in fact, I think I even got it from Asia. It was in a pack of possibly bootleg movies, maybe. Not legal.
From Asia? No.
Yeah. But the movie's okay, I think. But the soundtrack, I remember thinking, like, man, this is great. Like, this is very 80s pop electro kind of stuff. Again, like Madonna or even Jellybean Benitez's stuff. And at the very end, I read through the credits, and sure enough, Nile Rodgers had produced the music. So, as far as I know, it has never been released as an album or LP or anything like that. You can go on YouTube and find little clips of it. And I think maybe there might have been one song that was a single. So, if Nile Rodgers or anybody at the record company or the movie company happens to hear this, if you put it out, at least two people will buy it. I assume you're in on this, right?
Yeah, I'll check it out.
Okay, cool. You got support. We got a solidarity, man.
I got your back.
Okay, cool. So, you have two sales at least. And you would think any other 80s music nerds or Madonna fans, just by association, I would think.
It's called the Alphabet City soundtrack?
Yeah. So, Alphabet City is the film, and soundtrack is what we would like. Okay, so for your choice of modern groups that are carrying the 80s torch, Mr. Mindub, who's your vote going for right now?
Well, I mean, there are tons, obviously. I mean, it's quite the rage now to be retro and vintage and whatever. But I'm going to keep it close to home.
Right. Represent Tennessee.
Represent Nashville. There's a really great band here in town called Future Unlimited. Their website is afutureunlimited.com. Don't forget the A. Features a couple of our mutual friends, and they are not really old enough to remember the 80s, so I don't know how they managed to sound so great.
Right. But, it's not exclusively 80s.
No, but it's certainly influenced. There's a huge influence
right.
from that time period. And, but it's nice because they've definitely updated the sound and whatnot. Mm-hmm. They recently released a song. They collaborated with an Australian group called Miami Horror, mm-hmm. who are doing very well. I think they're on their third album or so.
You did a little video for them, didn't you?
Well, just because the song was so great and I didn't know if it was going to end up being a single. So, the power of social media, I just went ahead and made a quick
video featuring some images of both Miami Horror and Future Unlimited.
These are photos that you took, right?
Yeah, I shot them at one of the shows they did at Mercy Lounge. Mm-hmm. So I kind of interspersed those photos and uploaded it to YouTube just because I was proud of my guys.
Yeah.
You know? I was so glad that they had produced this great song with this great band and really kind of put Nashville on the map for, you know, some music other than bro country. I really wanted to kind of champion, you know, their accomplishments and their sound, and real proud of what they've done so far, and I think they're only going to go up from here. Yeah, so anyway, definitely check out Future Unlimited because they've got a really great updated take on the retro synth pop sound.
All right. In the Corner, Back by the Woodpile podcast is produced by A Closet, A Pocket, and A Suitcase. You can find us on Twitter as Spun Counter Guy, or you can email us via spuncounterguy@hotmail.com. And a special thanks to thebrofisticate.com.